Chapter 67. Tortured creatures. He healed the sick. They flocked to our poor human doctor this morning, when the fame of what he had done to the sick child when they brought in the land, and they worshipped him with their eyes, while they did not know as yet whether there was virtue in his symbols or not. The ancestors of these people precisely like them in color, dress, manners, customs, simplicity flocked in vast multitudes after Christ, and when they saw him make the afflicted whole with a word, it is no wonder they worshipped him. No wonder his deeds were the talk of the nation. No wonder the multitude that followed him was so great, that at one time 30 miles from here they had to let a sick man down through the roof, because no approach could be made to the door. No wonder his audiences were so great at Galilee, that he had to preach from a ship removed a little distance from the shore. No wonder that even in the desert places about Bethsaida, 5,000 invaded his solitude, and he had to feed them by a miracle, or else see them suffer for their confiding faith and devotion. No wonder when there was a great commotion in a city in those days, one neighbor explained it to another in words to this effect: they say that Jesus of Nazareth is come. Well, as I was saying, the doctor distributed medicine, as long as he had any to distribute, and his reputation is mighty in Galilee this day. Among his patients was the child of the Shaykh's daughter, for even this poor, ragged handful of sores and sin has its royal Shaykh, a poor old mummy, that looked as if he would be more at home in a poor house than in the chief magistracy of this tribe of hopeless shirtless savages. The princess, I mean the Shaykh's daughter, was only 13 or 14 years old, and had a very sweet face and a pretty one. She was the only Syrian female we have seen, yet who was not so sinfully ugly that she couldn't smile after 10 o'clock Saturday night without breaking the Sabbath. Her child was a hard specimen, though there wasn't enough of it to make a pie, and the poor little thing looked so pleadingly up at all who came near it as if it had an idea that now was its chance or never, that we were filled with compassion which was genuine and not put on. But this last new horse I have got is trying to break his neck over the tent ropes, and I shall have to go out and anchor him. Jericho and I have parted company. The new horse is not much to boast of, I think. One of his hind legs bends the wrong way, and the other one is as straight and stiff as a tent pole. Most of his teeth are gone, and he is as blind as bat. His nose has been broken at some time or other, and is arched like a culvert now. His under lip hangs down like a camel's, and his ears are chopped off close to his head. I had some trouble at first to find a name for him, but I finally concluded to call him Balbic, because he is such a magnificent ruin. I cannot keep from talking about my horses, because I have a very long and tedious journey before me, and they naturally occupy my thoughts about as much as matters of apparently much greater importance. We satisfied our pilgrims by making those hard rides from Baalbek to Damascus, but Dan's horse and Jack's were so crippled we had to leave them behind and get fresh animals for them. The dragoman says Jack's horse died. I swapped horses with Muhammad, the kingly-looking Egyptian who is our Ferguson's lieutenant. By Ferguson I mean our dragoman Abraham, of course. I did not take this horse on account of his personal appearance, but because I have not seen his back. I do not wish to see it. I have seen the backs of all the other horses, and found most of them covered with dreadful saddle boils which I know have not been washed or doctored for years. The idea of riding all day long over such ghastly inquisitions of torture is sickening. My horse must be like the others, but I have at least the consolation of not knowing it to be so. I hope that in future I may be spared any more sentimental praises of the Arab's idolatry of his horse. In boyhood I longed to be an Arab of the desert, and have a beautiful mare, and call her Selim or Benjamin or Muhammad, and feed her with my own hands, and let her come into the tent, and teach her to caress me, and look fondly upon me with her great tender eyes, And I wished that a stranger might come at such a time, and offer me $100,000 for her, so that I could do like the other Arabs, hesitate, yearn for the money, but overcome by my love for my mare, at last say, part with thee, my beautiful one. Never with my life. Away, tempter, I scorn thy gold. And then bound into the saddle, and speed over the desert like the wind. But I recall those aspirations. If these Arabs be like the other Arabs, their love for their beautiful mares is a fraud. These of my acquaintance have no love for their horses, no sentiment of pity for them, and no knowledge of how to treat them, or care for them. The Syrian saddle blanket is a quilted mattress 2 or 3 inches thick. It is never removed from the horse, day or night. It gets full of dirt and hair, and becomes soaked with sweat. It is bound to breed sores. These pirates never think of washing a horse's back. They do not shelter the horses in the tents, either they must stay out and take the weather as it comes. Look at poor cropped and dilapidated Albic, and weep for the sentiment that has been wasted upon the Selims of romance. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.